When I hear real talk, the first thing that comes to mind is having a conversation without judgment, shame, or assumptions, and being able to sit and talk with another person about different thoughts, ideas, or struggles that are authentic and genuine to their day-to-day life. I loved this answer from today's guest when we asked, "What does real talk mean to you?" And him and I did exactly this in today's episode as we had a conversation about body image, addictions, and therapy from a licensed male counselor. Before introducing him, welcome to Real Talk with Rachel. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert, and I'm a therapist on a mission to bridge the gap between faith and therapy. These episodes are meant to be educational, not a replacement for your therapist. You're going to want to stick around till the end of the show for our Let's Get Real Practical segment. This is where I share counselor-proof strategies to take the topic discussed with today's guest and make it relevant in your everyday life through simple action steps. Well, this is an exciting month because we're celebrating the 1-year anniversary of releasing my book, Image Restored. And we've already had a couple of fun episodes. I had my husband on a couple weeks ago. Then last week, I had my acquisitions editor on. If you missed either of those, go back and check them out. But real quick, I want to read another review from a reader on Amazon. You can find all kinds of reviews there if you're interested in looking at them. Here's what she said. "This book exceeded my expectations. Rachel Gilbert has put together an excellent combination of experiences, scripture, guided workbook sessions, and counselor tips, along with video that is truly inspiring. In my years of group fitness and body image struggles, I've been searching for comfort, and she guided right to what I lacked. This would be great for small groups and for all ages to share. I hope this book continues to reach other women as it has touched me. Thank you so much for writing this, Rachel Gilbert." Well, dear reader, you're so welcome. And thank you for that kind review. And I wanted to let those of you who are listening know that if you're considering leading a group, as this reader had suggested, now is the time to purchase because Image Restored has been 50% off on Amazon. It's the cheapest I have seen it on there, but you want to go grab a few copies. I would do that now immediately because if you're familiar with how Amazon works, we never know how long they run those sales. So go grab them. You can't beat that price, and that'd be a great time to grab some copies and do it with the group. Okay, well, enough about all that. Let me formally introduce you to today's guest. I'm going to introduce you and tell you what he does, and then I'll tell you kind of where we met, and we also talk about this in the episode as well. Calvin Burns' counseling specialties include disordered eating, addictive behaviors, depression, anxiety, parenting support, adolescents and emerging adults, and couples counseling. One of the unique gifts that Calvin brings to the therapeutic space is his unwavering hope for others. This hope is something that drives his practice of counseling and how he cares for those he works with. When a person's life is supplemented with support from a mental health professional, Calvin is confident that each individual has the potential to overcome or endure any difficult obstacle someone may be facing. Throughout his time in various therapeutic settings, Calvin has seen time and time again that people can change, and he firmly believes that stories can be rewritten. Well, amen, Calvin. And friends, you're in for a treat with today's conversation. And I'm thankful I met Calvin at a conference that we were both speaking at, a body image conference. And I knew from the moment I heard him speak, you're not going to hear Calvin. He doesn't have a podcast. He doesn't have, you know, he's not really on social media. Him and I talked about this even, I think, after that we recorded. He doesn't have a big online presence, I guess, is what I'm saying to you. But wow, he has a big heart. And that hope, like, you can feel it. When I was interviewing him, I'm not kidding, I could just sense, wow, this man not only loves what he does, he loves people, he loves the Lord, he loves to see people walk in freedom. You're going to experience that with him today. And he's also going to share with you his website where you can connect to him if you're in the Texas area and want to know more about his counseling services. He also, I guess one other thing I do want to share that in today's episode, he also very vulnerably shared about his suicide attempt in the seventh grade, which is really what led him to seek counseling and then also to become a counselor himself. So please help me welcome Calvin to the show. Well, hello, Calvin. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you are one of those fun people that I feel like I've known your name for a while because, fun fact for the listeners, I did my graduate level internship in one of the clinics that you're associated with in the DFW area. You're not here in the DFW area. Right. So I always had heard your name. And then recently we were at a conference where we both were speakers, the In His Image conference, and I got to hear more of your story. And then I just paired together. I was like, that's how I know him. And so I went and connected with you and I knew I have to have him on the show because you bring so much wisdom, so much experience, and just a voice in this area that I don't think we hear enough from. So thank you for agreeing to come on the show from a random girl that you met at a conference.
You're absolutely welcome. No, I've been excited ever since we met, so I appreciate it.
Yeah. So tell us, I do like to ask all of my guest, what is, you know, in the introduction, I read your professional bio, but sure, what would be something that we would not know about you just from reading your professional bio?
Yeah. So in high school, I was in the band and all that kind of stuff. But something a lot of people don't know about me is I was also in a country western dance group. They're called the Wranglers. And so a lot of people have heard about the Aggie Wranglers. And it's two-stepping, box dance, all the different things. But the fun part was we did all the flips. And so I know how to do, like, me and my wife will do it. Sometimes we go dancing, like do throw her up in the air, kind of go around my body and do all that kind of stuff. And we just have a great time doing that. So I've been very grateful for that skill that I gained randomly in high school.
Oh, that's so fun. Okay, I'm going to make sure my husband listens to this because I've been telling him, I'm like, I want to go take lessons or something. And
it's so fun.
Yeah. What a great date night to be able to go do that too.
Yeah.
That's fun. Okay. I love it. All right. Well, so, you know, as I mentioned, I met you at in person at the In His Image conference, and you are on a men's panel. So I want you to tell the listeners what you specialize in as a counselor and really how even your past has shaped the things that you're passionate about in what you do in counseling.
Yeah. So I specialize in eating disorders, addiction, and trauma. Those are the top three things that I see. And with eating disorders in particular, body image, that's a big passion of mine. And so how I even got there was I've wanted to be a counselor since the seventh grade. Like, this is something I've wanted to do my whole life. Around that time, and I'll get back to that in a second, but all the way through high school, college, or graduate school, like, this is just, I've known I'm supposed to do this. And what got me to that place was a lot of addiction, divorce, abuse that I went through as a kid. And the person that was Christ on earth to me was my therapist. He was a man that was steady and consistent and that was honest, but firm, but loving all at the same time. And that man, I didn't know it then, but he did such an incredible work in my heart that he just held space for me where I felt like I didn't have anything else. I didn't have it anywhere else. And so that was, and there was an event where, given everything that was going on at the time for me, there was an event that I tried to take my own life. And I was so grateful that God didn't allow that to happen. And it was in that same night that he told me, like, you're right. It doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. But it's because you continue to pursue life and joy in so many things that are outside of me. And no wonder it's not working out for you. But when you are still and when you focus on me, that's where you find rest. And so ever since, I knew that there was a reason for me to be alive. I knew that there was a reason for me to continue forward. And that's what a lot of the work with my own therapist looked like was I don't know if he ever used the word hope, but he always held space for hope and helped me hold on to the hope that there's more. And that's carried into my practice today.
Wow. That it so much sums up. I'm sure the listeners can hear it in your voice too. I know whenever I heard you interviewed on the men's panel, you can always tell when something like this, be it empathy or just hope or whatever, just it pours out of you. And I believe that, you know, it's when we hit those low moments that you just described, it's like, and you broke open and you let the Lord in that moment, it deposits something in there that's like there for life, right? You know, no matter what you go through, just it's there that it exudes out of you and it just comes out naturally. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really neat. So do you mind sharing any more then about a little, you know, any of your story that shaped you? You know, you mentioned some, did you say some addictions in there or what did you say? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So starting at, I was actually a wrestler in high school as well. And, but that was just my freshman year because then I had a pretty bad neck injury that I had to wear a neck brace for about 8 months. So the reason I bring that up is that come to find out years later, my sophomore year of undergrad, I started to have chronic pain or experienced chronic pain to the point where, and this was in the opioid epidemic, to where I had a pain specialist that would just prescribe me way too much pain medication. And the pain was very real to me. However, whenever they do scans and like look internally, there was nothing that could be seen that was wrong. And so this just developed into an addiction to where I would take, essentially my general practitioner years later said, you take as much pain medicine as a terminally ill cancer patient, and this is not okay.
Wow.
And I was going to school, I was living my life, but just in a lot of pain. And so through getting married and realizing a lot of hard truths about what was happening in my life, God blessed me with an opportunity to walk away from that. And so for me, it was an opiate addiction. And since then, I haven't gone back, which I'm incredibly grateful for.
I love, Calvin, how you just phrased that right there at the end. God blessed me with an opportunity to walk away from it. What a beautiful perspective, right?
Thank you.
Tell us how you landed there. Again, maybe for the person listening that they're might be struggling with something else that they're addicted to, of switching how they're viewing the opportunity to walk away from it.
Absolutely. And that, to your point, this applies to an addiction, an eating disorder, kind of you name it, whatever sickness, illness thing that's keeping us back. Trust me, at first it did not feel like an opportunity. It felt like a significant loss. Like, this is how I got by. This is how I thought I was able to survive. This is how I thought I was able to live and actually be a productive member of society. Yet it was the exact thing that got in the way of me seeing just how good God was and how he could bless me and use me, because it was something that kept me numb. It was something that kept me afraid. It was something that held me back from seeing and experiencing all that God had in store. And that after several years of work and a lot of hard conversations, now I can look back and say that it was an opportunity, because if it wasn't for the love of my wife and having her speak truth into my life and help me see things I didn't see before, I wouldn't have changed. And that's why we can't do this alone. That's why we need, whether it's a friend, a spouse, a mental health professional, to come alongside us to see things that we don't see because we're so stuck and afraid and overwhelmed, so that we can heal and have that opportunity to change.
Yeah. I love that you've mentioned more than once about your wife and that support that she was, because I just did an interview with my husband that's going to release before yours. And we talked about my body image journey and how he was a huge part of my healing in that.
Yeah.
And it really is a blessing. You know, I know not everybody has that, but it is a gift when you do have a partner who's able to come alongside and be, you know, with you and walk through that with you and be supportive in that way. You made also a comment about that you knew that's what was keeping you numb. So as you became, you know, where you weren't numb anymore, that is definitely the uncomfortable place for a lot of people.
Oh, yes.
So how do we walk through that when you're like, I've been used to being numb. Now what?
Oh, that's a great question. The first thing that comes to mind is like having an anchor. Like, what is your anchor? What is something that has proven to be true and right and trustworthy? And that's hard to find, because we can dismiss people. We can tell them, no, you don't understand. You don't get it. And you're right. Like, they don't see your perspective. They're not in our bodies, in our minds. And at the same time, they may see something that's more true than we see it. And so that the willingness to be wrong is an incredible tool in that. In every appointment, every client that I start to work with, in the first appointment, I talk about, the second thing I ask them is, I'm going to be wrong a lot. And so I just ask that you're willing to hear me out. Mm. Like, you don't have to agree. If anything, at times I want you to disagree with me, have the conversation, but I just ask that you're willing to hear me out.
Yeah.
Because I see that as an incredible piece to create, again, that opportunity for change.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that you brought that up, because I've had those moments with clients as well. And they'll, you know, kind of go, no, that's actually not true at all. And I'll tell them, oh my goodness, I'm so proud of you. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
You're proud of me? Because I disagree. And I said, yes, because you came to your own, like, you hashed this out and you came to your own conclusion. And then you were able to use your own voice to tell me that I was wrong. And that's, I love that. And it makes them feel super empowered and heard and understood. And so I like that. Okay. So we talked a tiny bit about the addiction piece. What made you want to get into counseling the eating disorders and the body image?
Yeah. So eating disorders was something I never thought I would work with. Like, I had no idea. I didn't really even know that much about it. So I primarily thought I was going to work with addiction. And I, given my own personal story and my family's history with that, I was like, okay, this is what I know best. And so in the work, my first 2 years after getting my license, I worked at an addiction facility, substances, that kind of deal. And I just experienced a lot of burnout from the day after day and the intensity of that and how it would even trigger things within me. And so what I began to realize was a lot of clients also had eating disorders in that as something that they were struggling with as well. And over time, that was a real interest to me. It stood out. I was like, wait, yes, eating disorders and substance abuse addictions, they have their differences. However, the approach to healing and change and how the thought processes behind them are very similar. And so it was a gift from God to say, like, hey, here's something that you're aware of and you can see clearly. However, I don't have that same personal emotional tie to the fullest extent that I did with a substance abuse addiction. Mm. And so it allowed me to be present with someone and challenge them while also not taking on any additional burden within me. And so that's when it's like, oh, here it is. Like, this is my thing. And I've loved it ever since. Yeah. Again, never thought I would, but that has been, I love working with eating disorders.
Yeah, that's so wise for you to recognize that. Can you tell the listener, if they're kind of going, well, I don't know what the thought process is, you know, with the addiction and the eating disorder, can you tell them that? Yeah.
Oof. So I'm sure everyone's thoughts are different, but in a general way, I need this to be okay. That when I feel something and something hits me, I don't know what to do with it. But I do know that this not only distracts me from it, but it helps me get through it. And if not, numbs me from it. So I'm going to keep leaning on this, whatever it is, substance, eating disorder, gambling addiction, pornography, you name it. I'm going to keep leaning on this so that I can be okay. Yeah. And that is one of the biggest lies that Satan can give to us, because it's the exact thing that keeps us from that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of reminds me of what you said earlier. It's almost like it is their anchor. It is their crutch, right? The thing they're leaning on. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So then that's scary to say, let's take that away. Yeah.
Oh, terrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Terrifying. And that's something else I tell my clients, like, this is going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not going to be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that then when it comes to eating disorders, because, you know, I was once talking to one of my mentors and she wrote some of the therapist thoughts in my book. And we were talking about how with food, it is so tricky because, you know, we need food to survive, right? Whereas with drugs, we don't need them to survive.
No.
You know, we can't just take food away or do something, you know, we still need it. And so can you speak into that a little bit on, you know, not making it a crutch, right? Like not making it my anchor, but then also going, oh, but I still need it. Like I can't completely just leave you behind, right?
Absolutely. And that's something I validate my clients all the time. It's like, this is really hard, because it's like telling a substance abuse addict, like let's say an alcoholic, hey, okay, instead of abstinence and just like taking this away and not using that skill anymore, that coping mechanism, we're going to implement it 3 to 6 times a day in a moderate amount and then just keep that consistent. Don't go over, don't go under.
Yeah.
And that, what? No one says that. Like, that's not a thing. And to your point, it's so challenging to manage that and to find balance and consistency with that in an eating disorder. Because like you said so well, we need food, and that that's something I think a lot of people underestimate about eating disorders is the challenge of balance and being able to step into that and not just put it aside.
Yeah.
As painful as that is in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you stack into this, the whole diet culture and all that comes in with that. I mean, I just feel like food has gotten extremely way more complicated, I know, than God ever intended for it to, you know, something that was meant to be a blessing to us, to keep us going and keep us alive, has really gotten twisted in so many ways. And how do you see, even with diet culture, how it has shifted? I mean, we could spend a whole, you know, probably do a 3-part series on diet culture, so we won't go too deep here. But even just how it has skewed to where, I don't know about you, I just have observed that sometimes something we think that is painted as a healthy thing to do is really disordered eating. Do you see that? That's sometimes with some of the things.
Time. Yeah. Uh-huh. All the time, especially with men that it can, and yes, and women as well. But one of the differences between men and women within the world of eating disorders is like, hey, I want to build muscle. I want to like take care of my body. I want to be strong. And like, that's a beautiful thing. Like, that's a great, heck yeah, be strong. But then it's taken to that extent of like, now my strength is my worth.
Yeah.
And when, and that's, I mean, that's Satan's best tool. It's just, as you said so well, to take something that is beautiful and that is a gift to us, that food is a gift to our bodies to nourish and take care of. And Satan distorts it.
Yeah.
He takes it away from its original intent and creates an opportunity to pursue him and live in his realm. And that's what I see time after time, is that Satan just takes something that is beautiful and just adds a little twist to it. And then it becomes something so broken and flawed.
Yeah.
That becomes that anchor that we talked about before.
Yeah. Can you define for the listeners the difference between an eating disorder and disordered eating? I get this question a lot.
Yeah, that's a great question. To my best ability, a disordered eating would be a pattern of eating habits and an approach to food that is inconsistent or driven more off of insecurity and fear and uncertainty. In that, that's typically the first stages of a eating disorder. Like, there are several clients that I work, patients at the facility I worked at, that when they were younger in the adolescent age, that it was more of a disordered eating pattern. Like, hey, this is not going to go well. More often than not, it becomes an eating disorder when those insecurities, fears, and uncertainties really sink in and become that individual's identity. That internal eating disorder voice becomes the conscience for them, instead of them having their own opinion and thoughts and perspective. And then this kind of uncertainty and fear is on the side driving decisions they make. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for sure. No, I think that's a beautiful explanation. And I even love that you say that, you know, disordered eating really is the beginning of, and so that's why it's also important we take that seriously and not just go, oh, everybody has some disordered eating, whatever. Because if we're just like anything that the enemy likes to do in our life, if we put up with a little bit of disorder, you know, then if we don't deal with it when it's maybe a bit smaller, then it's going to be much more challenging to deal with as it grows and gets bigger and turns into much, much more of a thing to work through. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, just like my own personal addiction with opiates, like medicine's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It was something that allowed me to go to class and do what I needed to do. However, I leaned on that. Satan distorted me and said, hey, this is your ticket out. Yeah. Instead of saying like, hey, let's keep looking. Let's try to figure out what's going on here. Yeah. I just kept going towards that, and that became my identity.
Yeah.
And so in the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's circle back around now to the male perspective of some things, because, you know, I did write a book on body image called Image Restored. And I tell people often, and even when I get a chance, that, well, here's a tiny bit of backstory before I say this, that when I did an internship in an eating disorder center, it was eye-opening to me to see, oh, there's pretty equal parts men and women in here. It wasn't just women in that center, right? And I think that is a stigma we have of it's mainly a women's issue, because that's all the resources and things. And so while my book has pretty flowers on it and whatnot, I tell people, I'm like, this is not just a woman's issue, but as an author, you do have to choose who's your target reader, right? You can't appeal to everybody. Absolutely. So like we're targeting the women right now. But that was one of the other reasons I wanted to bring you on here is that, I mean, you bring a lot of insight to the table, but I know I've had a lot of listeners send private messages saying, hey, I have a son who's struggling or my husband's struggling, but there's not many resources for them. We don't talk about it very much. So can you talk about that, how you have seen men struggle with maybe body image or the eating disorders as well?
Yeah. So while there are similarities, and I can get to that, more often than not with men, it is image-based. Like, I want to be presented in this strong form. I want to be seen as respectable and like someone that is not weak. Mm. A lot about weakness. And while you're going to see more women in a facility or in that way, that to your point, no, there are plenty of men that struggle with this, and including myself throughout my life. When I look in the mirror, nine times out of 10, I'm going to see something that's not there. Yep. that my wife does not see. If anything, she sees something that is that much better and more beautiful and that she loves. But I see, out of my own insecurities and uncertainties, I see something that's distorted. And that, oh my gosh, when I would go on dates in college or at anything, like I would change several times and I would freak out over how something fit me or something like that. Or if I didn't look a certain way, I would try different protein shakes. I would try all these foods. I would work out several times a day or go to the gym an unreasonable amount of days, just trying to present myself and be seen as valuable and worthy of someone else's love and affection. And so for men, a lot of the times it's this, I want to be seen as desirable. I want to be seen as attractive, and that a mate of mine, a woman, will see me and be like, wow, he is strong and I want to rely on him. And so again, Satan takes something that is beautiful and distorts it and lets that become the focal point, is the image over the person that man actually is.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think about kind of what we've already been talking about, identity, back to that.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you mentioned there are some similarities too, when it comes to how men struggle like women do. Is that kind of also in that identity piece or anything else? Or
I would agree. A lot of the similarities are around emotional management, mm-hmm. that kind of, like I mentioned earlier, like, hey, I'm going to lean on this because I don't know how to manage this myself.
Yeah.
This is going to be how I get through this. Some other things are a desire for control and a desire to be that loved, that and desirable. That's a very common thing, mm-hmm. whether men or women, that like, hey, I want to be seen as attractive. I want to be seen as something that is good. I guess one more thing that stands out to me is the difficulty to ask for help. Mm. That when they're in these mindsets, these moments, it's very challenging for these individuals to get out of their own head and say, you know what, even though I don't know it, or I feel like I'm doing it wrong, it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah. That brings me to I got some great questions from listeners and then also those who follow me on Instagram, and they were really excited that we were going to address this topic. And one lady asked, she said, how can we support men in their body image struggles? Because to your point, you don't see them asking for help usually, or it is a little more, you know, feels a little more shameful or whatever. Do you have any ideas on that for them?
That's a hard one, because often men's pride and their own fear get in the way of asking for it. And so they're going to say, no, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. As you were mentioning earlier, being consistent and direct, that is a very important thing, especially with men, is consistently presenting the issue and bringing it to their attention and be direct with them, saying like, I understand that you're not as worried about this. I understand that you don't think this is a big deal. However, it is. Like, I see this, I've seen this. And so just continuing to bring that to them and not allowing their diminishing of the concern or their dismissal of the concern to let it just fade into the background. That's a really critical step. And over time, that will build up. And it's like, okay, whether it's out of frustration or acceptance, like, okay, fine, something needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another follow-up question that came from that is then let's flip it. You know, that was towards a female. Let's flip it and say you're speaking to the man right now who might feel that feeling embarrassed or even ashamed to get help because, man, this isn't really a man's issue. You know, what are they going to think of me if I were to bring this up? What do you, would you say to the man listening?
I want to validate that. Like, and I just want to say, like, you're right. Like, not like typically, if you're just looking at statistics, yes, more women typically struggle with this than men. But dude, that is not a good enough reason not to address this. And that is your own fear and your embarrassment and your own shame, which I get. We all have our own ways. We all have our struggles. Trust me, I have plenty of it to keep working on. And man, it can get better. You can have a life where not only that you enjoy yourself, but you enjoy your body. And when you are able to be present in that, your relationships, your job, your just your life will improve because you can be present and not anxious and afraid on a day-to-day basis.
Calvin, I love that you gave a solution-focused answer there, even like to the, what it would look like at the end, because I know for a lot of men, I can speak for my husband, I can't speak for all the men.
Sure.
They like to know, okay, if I do this hard work, because like you and I just talked about, it's not easy work, right? Like, first of all, even admitting that you need help, that's really a hard hurdle to jump over.
Absolutely.
And then getting in there to have the help is not easy. And so a lot of people, and this goes for men and women, and it's not just men, they want to know, why should I do the work? Like,
right.
Why? Why should I not just keep numbing out? Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's a hard question because every time you try and answer that question directly and give a specific, it can be easily twisted.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, that like, no, I do have that. I don't have that. And so to not get into the details or the weeds of it, but just to say like, it can be better.
Yeah.
Because you can't argue with that. It's like, well, yeah, any self-improvement is going to help me improve, just given the name.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's different for each individual too, because I know for me, I knew I had a struggle that was very real and kept me isolated in many ways and all the things, but it got way more in my face, excuse the poor grammar there, when I had kids. And I specifically have two daughters and a son. But my why for doing the work went from about me to, oh, this is so much more than just me, because I don't want my daughters growing up with a mom who's still in bondage, right? Or who's still not at least seeking help, seeking to do things differently and making, you know, just saying, no, I don't want this for you, because it is literally, you know, felt like bondage to me, right? In my own little personal isolation cell, and very few people knew I was in there. And so, so I feel like everybody's why for doing the work. And that's what I like to tell people long before I became a counselor. Something the Lord spoke to me was, your why needs to be greater than your what ifs. And so, like, what's your why? Because there are going to be what ifs along the way and scary things and uncomfortable things, but man, that why. And so my why was, I'm doing this for my girls, you know, like, not that I'm not worth it on my own, but I'm also doing it for the generations that follow me too. Yeah.
Well, you touched on something so important that in the moment we may not have the internal motivation, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's not expected. Oftentimes we need external motivation to kind of get that initial shift and that initial like to get going. And over time, that internal motivation can build.
Yeah.
But that's okay to need that external. That's why we need community and support, because we can't do it on our own.
Yeah. Another great listener question that I got, that I think this doesn't just apply to eating disorders and body image, it also just applies to counseling in general, is she wanted to know, what do you think that keeps men from seeing a counselor? And again, this is a stigma. So let's even answer if we think this is true, that men have a harder time coming to counseling. And if so, why is that? And what can we do to kind of, you know, break that stigma for them? Mm.
To normalize that it's okay to ask for help, that doesn't change not only who you are, again, that identity, it doesn't change your identity. If anything, it helps you strengthen and create the identity you actually want. That asking for help gets you where you want to go. That burying our heels in the sand is only going to keep us stuck. And so something similar to what I mentioned earlier, that being direct and consistent with the spouse's needs or the parent's needs, it's for their male son or spouse, whoever it may be, that to be direct and consistent with that. often when you're right, when even when the men that do come to see me for eating disorders or other issues, it takes a little bit longer to get off the ground. I really have to get a lot of buy-in to say, like, dude, it's okay. Like, trust me, I have plenty of issues myself that everyone struggles. And once they can get to that point of breaking past that wall of like, oh, wait, it's okay to show weakness. It's okay to be vulnerable. Then we really get to get into things. So practicing vulnerability on the other person's end can often be a great invitation to invite that man, to invite that son, whoever it may be, that male figure, into that opportunity of change.
Yeah. Oh, I could sit here and talk to you for so much longer too about even just the emotions. I feel like that's another stigma around men of not wanting to show emotions, not wanting to feel the emotions, unless maybe it's anger or, you know, some other or hunger,
Yeah.
They call hunger an emotion. Yeah. But anyhow, what are your, and I know this is a big question, so you can answer it however you'd like, but emotions in men, like how do we start to, again, shift the perspective on that? You touched on it just a second ago about recognizing it's not weak to feel and to those kinds of things. Yeah.
Something that comes up in these conversations like this is redefining strength. And you kind of alluded to it as well. And I challenge men with this all the time, like, oh, so it's strong to hold all these things in and for them to come out in these unhealthy ways, whether it's in a harsh conversation with a loved one, whether it's working so hard and stressing yourself out because you feel like you're overwhelmed. Like, strength is not just grinning and bearing it. No, that creates weakness, that leads to addictions, that leads us to our fall. Strength is the acknowledgement of what is going on and what's wrong and the willingness to do something about it. That's how we create strength, because there's change, there's growth, there's opportunities, there's momentum, not just being overwhelmed, burdened and held back and anchored to, as you said so well earlier, capturing us and imprisoning us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I know you can always tell when you meet men who are in touch with their emotions in a healthy way, because it almost takes away this, you know, if we ever have anything in our life that we say we don't want to participate in, if you will, or feel or experience, that almost leaves an area that we have some fear in, almost, right? Yeah. Like, it owns us rather than us owning it and us being the one who's like, hey, I get to decide how we're doing this, you know? And anyhow, right. I think it makes a more confident, stable person, individual, leader on all the ways to be in touch with emotions. And I also like to remind men, especially because they can resonate, I'm like, you need to go, please go read the Psalms. David, I think he was the manliest man I know about in the Bible. I mean, the greatest warrior of all time. And the dude used and felt a lot of emotions. You can read it in his writing. I'm like, he felt them all. He expressed them all. So go read about him.
Yes, I love that.
Okay, so I do want to wrap up with giving you some space to talk about the foundational piece now of the work that you do in counseling is just the concept of hope. I want to just hear, you know, we touched on this right when we got started, but I want you just to be able to have a chance to share where that came from and how really you even implement that into your counseling.
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind is the third thing I mentioned to every client is whether if they're a secular client, I do give the reference, but if they do believe in God, then I tell them about Romans 5:3-5, that suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope doesn't lead us to shame. And I kind of add to that, whereas the avoidance of the first step, suffering, creates it. Personally, I believe hope is all we have, that we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't know what God's going to allow in our lives or Satan's going to add to our lives and distort in our lives. However, we can hold on to the hope that because Christ died for us, that there's more, that there's an opportunity, there's an ability for change, there's an opportunity to sustain the pain and the discomfort that we're in because he has a plan. He uses these things to grow us, develop us, strengthen us to become the individuals that we were created to be, which is the person of his image. And that's why I love that conference in his image, that I feel like that aligns perfectly, is when we hold on to hope and not allow the lies and the deceptions of day-to-day life to get in the way, we're able to see more clearly. We can take a step back and say, I don't understand this, but I don't have to. What I do understand and what I do believe is that God has good for me. And so I'm going to hold to that hope. I'm going to hold to that anchor over these other things so that I can continue to move forward. And that can be baby steps at a time, or I can continue to move forward in a way that is just beautiful and giving, life-giving and just exciting. Every client that walks into my room, I get the opportunity to just say, I'm not alone in this space. That I tell them every time, I don't know the answers. I'm going to be wrong a lot. Like that, I am, yes, I am a expert and have a lot of experience in mental health, but I am not the expert on your life. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be wrong a lot. But I say that because I have an unending hope, an unwielding hope that I am a vessel of Christ, and that because Christ is in me, something can change. Something can be done. And that's what drives my practice. Is the hope that even though I don't have the answer, that God's going to intervene, God's going to speak through me, and God's going to be present in that person and convict them to move towards him and become the person they want to be, that they were created to be.
Oh, Calvin, well, like I mentioned in the beginning, that hope just bubbles out of you. And I love that, you have taken your sufferings, right? That you just, and let the Lord do that shaping, do that process to bring you to that place of you have that hope as your anchor. And it's so interesting when Bible verses that we've read about, actually you see them come to life, you know, and you're like, oh, so that's what that looks like to walk, like to have that actually expressed in my life. Like, that's really cool. Okay. So where can listeners learn more about you, you know, follow along with you, get any, you know, updates on what you do in the counseling world?
So the best place right now is just going to be my website, which is unendinghope.net, not .com, but .net. And I actually don't have any social media. That's something I'm working on. I am way behind in that way. So that's in the works. But if and when that becomes available, I'll have it on there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, websites are always the best place to go, because as we know, social media is always changing. You know, what's popular today, it will not be tomorrow. But our websites will remain. So I love that. Yeah. Well, definitely go check that out. And you're in the Austin, Texas area, but then you also offer telehealth as well, right?
Correct.
The Texas residents. Yeah.
And I'm in network with Blue Cross, United, Cigna, and Aetna.
Okay. Nice. All right. Well, any final words of anything on your heart or encouragement you want to share to the listener before we hop off here?
To not give up. That it seems overwhelming. It seems like there's not a way forward, but just to not give up, to hold on to the hope that because Christ died for you, that you not only have a purpose, but he has a plan. That his son would not have been wasted. The pain that he went through would not have been wasted if he didn't have a plan for you. He did that for a reason. And so he has a reason for you to be here and a reason for you to be where you are. So hold on.
Amen. Well, thank you for ending on such a beautiful note. And thank you again for taking time to come on the show. We appreciate you.
Thank you. It was great. I appreciate you.
It's time for Let's Get Real Practical. This is the part of the show where we take the topic discussed with today's guest and we get into some practical steps you can implement into your life right now. Now, every time I interview another counselor, I almost feel like I could just not do this part of the show, because they especially tend to give lots of practical, applicable things throughout our episode. But as I was reflecting on what Calvin and I talked about today, I actually just feel like I have almost a word from the Lord for you, and I want to read to you a few passages of scripture. Calvin mentioned Romans 5, 3 through 5 was his verse that he loves about hope. So I'm going to read that to you. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. All right, and then I want to read to you also from Hebrews 6, verses 16 through 20. It says this, "People swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what is said, and it puts an end to all argument. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath. God did this so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope set before us may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner, Jesus, has entered on our behalf. He has become our high priest forever. Did you notice how many times hope was mentioned in those verses I just read to you? You know, the one that Calvin referenced from Romans 5 was just that reminder that our sufferings produce perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. In other words, it's a bit of a series of a string of events, right, that get that hope. And we all want hope, right? I mean, if you think about anybody who is really down in life, maybe even depressed or not sure things will ever change in their life, what do they lack? They lack hope. And so I love, though, that the word gives us a promise. Then we went into Hebrews here and saying, God's giving this promise that we have hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure, and it enters by, drumroll please, was not in the Bible, our forerunner, Jesus. Yay, Jesus, there he is again, our forerunner. What this says to me is that Jesus can take our sufferings, our pain, the things we've walked through, the hardships, kind of like what Calvin was talking about today, his addictions and his suicide attempt, and this darkest moment of his life, and instill hope in him. And I told you this in the intro, I'll tell you it again in the outro, and I'm sure you heard it through Calvin as he spoke today. He is a hope bringer, right? Like my little 30 minutes with him interviewing him, I felt the hope in the room. And it's no wonder he's so great as a counselor. But we know it's not Calvin who's produced that hope, it's Jesus in Calvin, right? And so I know both of us want that for you. So I have a couple of practical questions for you today. First question is, what suffering have you endured? Okay, I know there's a lot of suffering and hardships represented here in the listenership today. But then my next question is one that is one of hope. It is this: have you allowed Jesus to come be your high priest to embed hope in your heart in that darkest situation? Because my friend, this hope thing is not something we can conjure up on our own. It's not something we can white knuckle and just, you know, even buy somewhere or produce somehow. It's something we receive in those hard, dark, suffering, painful moments. Our heart is laid open, and I almost just envisioned that that pain is a portal for Jesus to come in and instill hope. So I'm going to pray, and if this resonates with you today, I want you to receive that hope. Father, I thank you for every listener who's sitting under the sound of my voice. Thank you, Lord, for the words from Calvin, how he just passed along the hope that you put within him to us today. And Jesus, we know that that is you who does that. And we receive your hope. We've received all kinds of things from you, Jesus. You're a great gift giver of grace and love and peace and mercy. But Jesus, sometimes we forget you instill hope. And so we receive that today. In those areas where we feel hopeless, we feel like things will never change. It'll always be this way, maybe we thought and we've lived under. But today we receive your hope. We also receive your peace in the midst of the storms. Do what only you can do, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Well, like I said, I felt like that was a word in due season for somebody. I pray that resonated with you. And I just want to encourage you also and remind you, if you listen to this show and you like it and you want to just bless me and honestly other potential listeners, would you consider leaving a review? That really just helps other people find the show and want to tune in when they see that, oh, other people have good things to say. So let them know your favorite part about it. And again, we're celebrating 1 year release of Image Restored. So if you have not gotten a copy yet, or you're like, what are you even talking about? If you're new here, just go to imagerestoredbook.com. It's currently on sale on Amazon as well. Well, I pray this Real Talk episode brought you one step closer to living free and pursuing your God-given dreams. And I'll see you back here next time on Real Talk with Rachel.